Hi there. Hope you're doing really, really well. I was adjusting the laptop here a little bit, but yeah, super excited having you back here and a bunch of questions, many good ones. Hope you'll find a lot of value here. Thanks, Bruce, by the way, for sharing the post. That's super nice of you. Thanks, everyone, for all the support, by the way. So I wanted to start actually with an email from Vincent from the Philippines, who I made a reply to, but as I sometimes do, I get carried away and I kind of didn't answer the question. So let's read it. Let's read this email from Vincent. Sorry for asking again, but you kind of didn't answer my question. That you say this. I've heard you say that someone asked the same question. He asked that even though he's not anxious, why can't he sleep? And you said that's because he's asking the question. That means he's probably worried. So what do we do if our mind's racing? How can we redirect our attention? Can we give an example? Is it meditation or what is that? Yeah, that's good. So yes, it's right. I just heard from I think this may have been in the previous episode. I think it was someone named Steve-O that had said this, and it's common. I hear a lot of people say, I don't feel anxious. I'm not stressed. But I just don't sleep. And then, as you mentioned there, when somebody says that, it's almost always that there's hyperarousal. Even though you don't feel frankly stressed or anxious, you probably are to some degree, right? And the fact that you're kind of asking about why you don't sleep, it means that you must be to some degree worried about it. Because if you slept very little and you just, you didn't think anything about it, then you wouldn't really be thinking about why you can't sleep. So this kind of the fact that you're thinking about sleep, wondering why you can't sleep, is in a way proof that you are to some degree worried. Or at least a little bit preoccupied, which it's hit your radar if you will. And so now that said, the more specific question here from Vincent, let me just go back there one more time so I don't miss on this. What do you do if your mind is racing? How can you redirect that attention? Okay, I thought about that a second ago, and here is I want to start with an analogy. I had a patient some months ago that just said that he said something like, I sleep like a fireman. And it was actually not in the context of insomnia, but that's where my mind went. That, a fireman is somebody who sleeps, probably very lightly, at least when on service, because he's listening out for that alarm. And as soon as that alarm bell goes off, up right away, get the gear on, get into that fire truck, go out and turn the fire, fight that fire, right? And so it was a good analogy, I thought, for two reasons. One, yes, if a fireman, you probably sleep very lightly. It's kind of you are at that hyperarousal stage, your brain is listening out, like very active, very alert. But this is not, I'm going in a little bit different direction than you may be thinking here. Meaning, imagine if this fireman gets to the actual fire. Which is a pretty small one, actually. But then, as soon as he aims the hose and sprays some water on it, it actually becomes bigger. And then he naturally sprays more fire into it. It becomes even bigger, and on this goes until it's a huge forest fire, So the analogy here is that my initial thought of this analogy was that if you have trouble sleeping, and you then try to make yourself sleep or kind of do things, that is kind of like actually, making the fire even bigger. You think you're making it small, but you actually make it bigger. So the trick is to step away from it and actually let the fire die down by itself. That's kind of the original analogy. But it is true for many other things too, including hyperarousal, meaning if you try to kind of like directly decrease the hyperarousal, you're doing something with a specific purpose of getting that hyperarousal down. Then you're going to achieve the opposite. And that's why when people try to meditate so that they decrease their hyperarousal, that backfires. But if somebody meditates because they enjoy meditation, well, guess what? Then that's perfect. because they're not thinking about anything else than the fulfillment, the joy, the pleasure of meditating. And that takes your attention away from hyperarousal. You don't think about your trouble sleeping or whatever it is. That can be really helpful. But the point here is, it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't have to be meditation. It doesn't have to be yoga. It can be playing video games. It can be hanging out with your friends. It could be, you know, mountaineering. It could be anything. Anything that you do for the enjoyment and pleasure and fulfillment of that thing, whatever it is, in my opinion, the best way, the easiest way, the most effective way of decreasing hyperarousal. Now, there are other ways too. There is the kind of intense journaling that I learned from Nick Wignall, which is, I think, is more effective if you have specific anxious thoughts, if you know what you're worried about. In that case, you could set up a little time, like 7 minutes, you know, or 5 minutes or 10 minutes each afternoon, and then just write down what you're worried about and get it all out there. It becomes like an outlet for your worries and stress. And if you do it every day, like exercise, that frees up, you know, your mind that's trying to kind of bombard with all these thoughts, gets this outlet that can really work. But if it's just that it's underlying hyperarousal that you may not even be aware of, then I believe that just doing things that you enjoy for the enjoyment of them is the best thing to do. I hope that answered your question. In fact, I'm going to go back one more time to make sure I didn't miss anything. So what do you do with the mind is racing? Yeah. You said we direct your attention. Yeah. Can you give an example? Yeah. I hope I answered that question. Vincent, if I didn't, please come back. So that was Vincent. And then actually, since we're here in this mailbox, let's move to this one. This is from, let's just read this. Let's just read this email. Came in one day ago. And this is also from Vincent, but it's a different Vincent. Okay. Here we go. Dear Daniel, I am a chronic insomnia patient since 2011. From 2011 to July of 2019. Oh, I forgot my disclaimer for everyone tuning in here. Nothing is medical advice to Vincent, you know, the previous Vincent or you, Vincent, or anybody else. Just me sharing general thoughts and general advice here. So that said, I'm a chronic insomnia patient. I'm still able to sleep around 5 to 6 hours per day. However, the entire situation got worse since the end of July. So I believe I have the SFI disease, but I'm not really sure about it. My symptoms onset was the end of July. On 21st of August, I went to a psychiatric clinic seeking medical treatment since I didn't sleep for over 48 hours without any particular reason. My psychiatrist did a great job. After approximately 1 month medical adjustments, my psychiatrist found the best combination of medical drugs to let me sleep. Lyrica, 150 milligram, Lexapro, 50 milligrams, mirtazapine, 30 milligram, Seroquel, 200 milligrams, clonazepam, 1 milligram, propranolol, 10 milligrams. The effect of these medical drugs are great. I'm able to sleep like 7 to 8 hours per day. However, my muscles started twitching and jumping approximately 10 days ago, and my leg was unintentionally kicking when I almost fell to sleep on the bed and makes me awake immediately. As you mentioned in episode 46, SFI is a nervous system disease. The above symptoms, I don't know. I'm not sure whether the side effects of medical drugs or not. To sum up here, I have serious insomnia. I have muscle twitching, jumping, unintentional leg kicking when almost falling asleep. Do you think these symptoms are too coincidental? Now, a couple of things here. Let's start with going towards the question here, which is, it's a question really about these muscle twitching and jumping and things like that. And I actually have this analogy that I plan to do one of those Insomnia Insight shorter videos about. And imagine this. So I'm sure you're familiar with track and fields, right? And the 100 meter dash. So you have like, I don't know how many people there are, 8 people or something like that are lined up to run this 100 meter dash, right? They've probably been training for years for this event, right? They're ready. They're prepared. They're in the start blocks, right? And every single little nerve cell in their brain is waiting for that shot, after which they run, right? So you see this all the time, that they're all lined up, and often one of the runners just darts away, and there wasn't, like, nothing happened for no reason. Or, you know, somebody sneezes and then somebody runs away. So they are in a state of hyper arousal. They are, like, hyper alert, hyper aware, ready to go, fight and flight, right? That's where they're so jumpy, okay? And you see the same thing play out with insomnia. Even, you know, I can think now, Vincent, you're sleeping much more, but you're still, you know, you're out there looking in YouTube for, you know, videos on sleep. If on my channel, you're asking me, I think to some degree, there is some worry about sleep still, right? And I think it is very likely that, or let me put it this way, what you're describing, the muscle twitches, the jerks, are very, very common among people with insomnia. And just as those runners easily twitch, jump, because they're in a state of hyperarousal, I think that is the reason why so many people with insomnia have these twitches and jerks, etc. Now, just a general comment on, like, medications. I think the only something that I talk about this a lot is that the only thing that can really produce sleep, that can make a human being sleep, is your internal, like, sleep drive, your need for sleep, your hunger for sleep. And the one thing that produces that strong sleep drive is wakefulness. So that's why it's so important for somebody that has trouble sleeping to get up. You know, typically, this is kind of classic, you know, typically get up at 6 a.m., stay awake during the day, and don't go to bed before 12. That's usually how you start. So you build up a strong sleep drive, and that then helps you sleep. There's really nothing else that can produce sleep. And when, you know, a lot of people take medications or supplements or use gadgets or things like that, and feel like this really helps me sleep, well, that's, you know, when somebody's taking, let's say somebody's taking melatonin and they've taken that for 5 years and they're sleeping great, I don't really feel a strong need to tell that person anything, really. But if there's anything I would want to tell that person, it is, you know, the belief that the melatonin is making you sleep. If you believe that, that does put you in a bit of a vulnerable situation. Because when something changes, when there's a stressor and you don't sleep well despite taking melatonin, then you have this belief that the melatonin was making you sleep, and you may look outside again for another thing that's going to make you sleep. So for somebody that's sleeping well on medication but is somehow not necessarily wanting to continue taking this medication forever or supplement or whatever it is, I think a really good first step is to transfer confidence to the inside, to just know that even if one is taking a supplement medication, it is the body that produces sleep. It is always the body that produces sleep. And that's a really good way of transferring confidence to the inside. So Vincent, there was a follow-up email actually from Vincent. He just said he would stay in touch, and please do let us know how things are going. And if you have any more questions, please let me know. And with that said, we will, oh yeah, I guess another comment. Again, nothing here is medical advice, but, you know, one thing that you always read about these sporadic fatal insomnia is that it does not respond to medication. So just wanted to add that. Cool. So let's go to the next inbox here. My old email was insomniainsight@gmail.com. So I'm looking at that one, and now I'm going to the one I use mostly, which is daniel@insomniainsight.co. And we have two emails actually from MJ, who I made a reply to earlier, a couple of days ago, maybe a week ago. And let's start with this first one, came in 2 days ago. And Amy just says, just a quick question. Not sure how long it is a good idea to stick with a strict wake-up time or close to it moving forward. Because, you know, at times a person still has some setbacks from time to time where you have, say, you have not the best sleep that night and sleep for a few hours. I know that to completely 100% accept it. Any tip? Interesting. Okay. So, yes, I think that there was just some comment there. Any tip on that? Yeah. Yeah. So I think the answer to this question really becomes one of like sleep confidence, meaning if somebody is doing the what I want to start calling the sleep tight method, you know, spending less time in bed, getting up at 6, getting to bed at midnight, something like that, and is starting to, you know, see a pattern. Yeah, I'm falling asleep pretty quickly, I'm sleeping through the night, etc. Then when to start relaxing. But by the way, taking a step back, the goal, of course, is to completely forget about all this, you know, just, you know, go to bed when you feel sleepy and get up when you need to get up. That, and like you know, people who don't have trouble sleeping do, that's the goal. So of course you shouldn't be having these strict the strict wake-up time and don't go to bed before this time. Those kind of rules, they should evaporate as you get better. But how do you transition? Well, again, it becomes sleep confidence, in my opinion, when somebody feels like, you know what, I believe in myself, I can sleep, I don't really have a problem sleeping. And when they're there or close to there, then you can start relaxing these rules and regulations. You can be like, you know what, I'm just going to go to bed when I feel sleepy. No, I'm not going to stay up till midnight. I'm just going to go to bed when I feel sleepy. That's a good way. Or, you know, I think it's a little harder to start on the other end, meaning I'm now going to allow myself to sleep in because the wake-up time usually is like the anchor. But, you know, that's fine too. If you're confident, if it feels pretty good, then you can relax that too. You can sleep in a little longer. Now, what I feel was part of this question was, what if I have, what if I'm doing pretty good, but here and there, I don't sleep well? Do I still have to get up at 6? It also goes, that answer to that, I think also goes back to sleep confidence. If you've been sleeping pretty good for, you know, 10 days or 2 weeks, and you're feeling like, you know, I think I got this, I'm on my way to not having insomnia anymore, then you have a one night of a, let's say, setback, you don't sleep much. Yeah, I think if your confidence is pretty good, then you can allow yourself to sleep in. That's, you know, a lot of people do that. So again, it's about confidence. If your confidence is pretty good, allow yourself to sleep in. If you're still feeling like I'm not really confident, I can sleep, I still don't necessarily believe it 100%, then it's better to still get up early. I think that, I hope that's a good question, MJ. And MJ actually sent me another email 6 hours ago. Let's read it together. Hello, Daniel. I wrote to you about how long to stay on a set wake-up time or close to it moving forward and how long to stay on. Another question. If a person had a problem with sleep issues and you went and did all the CBT and got back to sleeping pretty good and you have some setbacks and you have some bad patches again, typically it takes shorter time to recover from the initial first time, right? Remember not to self-doubt yourself or talk negative because it makes it worse. Just stay on course and it straightens out. It's almost you want to always go back to the way it used to be before you even had any sleep issue, but before you never thought about sleep like a normal sleeper does. Now, is that just memory that causes a setback, or I guess anything sort of speaks to it? Life, of course, throws some curveballs, or maybe it could be nothing at all. Or is it a person who had a previous sleep issue more susceptible to setbacks? I guess that's part of sleep anxiety and not to worry about it, Because guess what happens when you go about your day and not think about your sleep issue like you did before? You actually sleep. But if you think about it, revolve your day around it, the opposite occurs. Hence, you have a complete shut out the negative and reap the rewards. Does it make sense? Hopefully it does. LOL. This, MJ, the way you write reminds me so much about somebody else. The insights and the positive things and all that. Huh, interesting. So to answer the questions here, typically it takes a shorter time to recover from the, yes. I would say yes, typically it does. So if somebody has had trouble sleeping and you use the techniques that I talk about here, the sleep tight, you know, spending less time in bed and shifting attention and try not to react to it, etc., and you get better, and then you later on have trouble sleeping again, and you either ignore it, which is good, or you go back to using the techniques again, then yeah, typically you get back on track faster. And then every time you get back on track using yourself, using these techniques and your insights, then just builds confidence. And you know, we know what they say, like scar tissue is actually stronger than the kind of initial tissue. And the more of it you have, the less vulnerable you are. So yes, absolutely. And other than that, I think another question here was kind of, why is it that is it that a person who had a previous sleep is more susceptible to a setback? I think the reason is that somebody that has never had any problem sleeping, like everyone, you know, people who had trouble sleeping or not, we all have times where we don't sleep well when there's anxiety or stress or whatnot, and that's completely normal. But for somebody who's never had trouble sleeping, then they typically don't react to it as much and go back to sleeping well. But yes, if you have had trouble sleeping, you've had insomnia, then your thoughts may go to, oh my gosh, it's going to start again. It's here again. I have insomnia again. That is why, yes, you are a little bit more susceptible, particularly if you've never had any cognitive behavioral therapy or any other, you know, behavioral, you know, education or anything like that. Then you're susceptible to having trouble sleeping again, because it's almost like, yeah, PTSD, almost like you remember what happened and you get afraid that's going to happen again, and that can be a trigger. And so I believe that is why you are a little bit more susceptible to having it again. But again, if you know the techniques, if you've done it in the past, you are in a good place. Absolutely. So overall, yes, I think all of it makes sense. It makes total sense, MJ. I think so. And then MJ added a PS. A PS, you're the best in your analogies. I think analogies are so important, and I love when I get a good analogy idea. All right, cool. Let's move on here to our comment section. And the first one here is from Golem 9000 from 2 days ago. It's a comment on episode pod 57. And Golem writes like this. Let's see. I don't know if Golem is he, she, or they. I'm just going to go my usual guess. It's a he, and I'm probably wrong, but let's go with he. So he writes like this. Hello again, doctor. So I was going over some of your older videos on CBD, and there are a few questions I had regarding that. For one, when it comes to bedtime restriction, which I now call sleep tight, spending less time in bed, you impress the importance of always sticking to your wake-up time. But what happens if you do that but end up not getting sleep at all during a session? Are you still supposed to get up regardless and wait for the next cycle to try again? I mean, if one were to do that with too many unsuccessful attempts, wouldn't that inadvertently result in doing wake therapy, which I remember from another video saying you're not a big fan of? Secondly, I'm confused on what to do when you suffer from your body never actually feeling sleepy. For instance, they say you should not attempt to sleep unless you're sleepy, but if you only ever feel tired but never sleepy, how would this work? Furthermore, when they say if you don't fall asleep in roughly 20 minutes, you should get up, do something else until you feel sleep and try again, but if you never feel sleepy, how is this possible? A lot of good questions here, a lot of really good questions here. So, first of all, so the first question becomes, if you're doing the sleep tight, the bedtime restriction, getting up, I'm going to use the same example again, if you decide I'm going to get up at 6, not go to bed before midnight, and you sleep really nothing, like you sleep very, very little, and you may finally feel like I'm probably going to sleep here, and it's like 4:30 a.m., yeah, you should still get up at 6. That is part of the program. And the idea, of course, is that if you get up at 6, you stay awake until midnight the following day, then your sleep drive, your need for sleep is going to grow, and you're more likely to fall asleep that night. If you sleep poorly again, then your sleep drive is just going to grow and grow and grow again to get back. Do I have those red and green things here? No, I don't. So your gas, your sleep drive, your need for sleep is going to just increase and increase and increase. And even if you have this hyper arousal and kind of like a little bit preoccupation or worry, then your sleep drive can overpower that, and eventually you'll sleep. Not necessarily, eventually you'll fall asleep and sleep the whole night, but you'll sleep a little bit more than you thought you would. You'll fall back asleep a little quicker. You'll see some positive signs, and that is really good. And then you just keep going, keep going, keep going, and things fall into place. So wouldn't that inadvertently result in doing wake therapy? Well, yes and no, meaning wake therapy, for those of you who haven't heard that, is kind of like sleep type, but on steroids, meaning you stay up for something like, you know, let's say 48 hours minus four, you stay up for like something like 44 hours and then allow yourself to sleep. And then you allow yourself to sleep like 4 hours, and then you stay awake for 19 and a half hours, and then you allow yourself to sleep four and a half, and then you stay up for 19 hours and allow yourself to sleep for 5 hours. That's how wake therapy works. And I'm not really a fan of it, meaning I've really never heard a success story. I've never heard a wake therapy success story. There probably are some. I've never heard one. And I feel like the build up towards like bedtime creates so much anticipation that it kind of becomes sabotaging it. So I think you could end up in a situation where you've been awake for like 40 hours. That could happen, yes. But I still don't think it's wake therapy, because wake therapy has that problem with the anticipation. If you didn't even know about wake therapy and didn't think of it, you know, didn't even think of it as this is potentially kind of like wake therapy, then it wouldn't become that. I don't know if I'm making sense right now, but what I want to say is the problem with wake therapy is kind of the anticipation. And if you're not thinking about that, it doesn't become wake therapy, or it doesn't, the problem with wake therapy, it doesn't become an issue. I hope that made sense. Golem, and please let me know if I can clarify that. Secondly, here is another common question, which, who was it? I started this off with somebody that had a very similar situation or similar question. What if I like never feel sleepy, right? I think a lot of times people that never feel sleepy also estimate sleeping very little. And oftentimes there is a component of paradoxical insomnia, meaning somebody may estimate sleeping 2 hours, but actually if you objectively checked it, at least sometimes we'll sleep more like 4 hours, you know, things like that. You just like so hyper aroused that you don't know how much to sleep. But where I'm going with this is to say that even if you feel like I sleep less, I'll sleep like 2.5 hours, I never really feel sleepy. How is spending 5 hours in bed and not more going to help me? But I've seen it do that a lot of times. In fact, I've never really seen somebody commit to the techniques I talk about here and not have benefits. So I think what happens is you have that paradoxical insomnia, and when you, even if it feels like you're never sleepy, you're sleeping less than, let's say, 5 hours, and now you're going to spend 5 hours in bed, how's that going to help? Well, it still does. And I know I bring her up all the time, but Ellen had very similar thing going on. Like, she didn't really feel stressed. She estimated sleeping 0 to 2 hours often. But she did really classical CBTIs, you know, and went from that scenario to, like, I think 6-7 weeks later, sleeping much, much better, you know. I hope that helps with that question. So if you're never really feeling sleepy, you can still do it. You can still do the techniques I talk about, and it helps. If you never feel sleepy, you shouldn't have, well, I think what will happen is probably something like this. Let's say you decide to do, like, I'm going to get up at a little bit tighter. Let's say you're going to decide to get up at 5 and not go to bed before midnight. And, you know, it's midnight, you don't feel sleepy. And it's 12:30, you don't feel sleepy. Maybe you won't feel sleepy, but maybe you will nod off eventually, right? Maybe you'll have one of those. That's a signal that even though you don't feel sleepy, you are sleepy. And that could be a cue. Maybe, I think it's very reasonable to say, if I nod off, or if I find myself, you know, watching a show and I don't know where I am or something like that, I probably fell asleep. That could be a cue. That could be a cue that it's time to go to bed. And this brings me to something I haven't talked about in a long time, but I know Michael Schwartz talks a lot about, is how with insomnia, one of the big things is actually kind of like learning how to feel sleepy again, recognizing sleepiness and feeling and just feeling sleepy again. So I'm just kind of, something new is popping up in my mind here that might be helpful, is that if you're not feeling sleepy, you can use like these cues, like the nodding off, you missed a section on the show you're watching, or you somehow the clock skipped ahead, I must have fallen asleep. That you could use that as a cue. But a very early positive sign is when somebody says, I'm starting to feel sleepy again. Very, very, you know, a lot of people do that. So for you, Golem 2, I bet you would also feel that. Furthermore, they say you shouldn't, if you haven't fallen asleep in roughly 20 minutes, you should get up and do something else until you feel sleep and try again. But if you never feel sleepy, how is this possible? Yeah, I think that rule, the 20-minute rule, is sometimes, you know, it could work for some people. It's very easy. It's a very straightforward rule. But I think what is more important than the 20 minutes is frustration. Meaning, if you are in bed and you haven't fallen asleep in however much time, it's always good not to look at a clock, but you're still feeling pretty good. You're thinking about something pleasant, or you're doing something in bed that you're enjoying. You know, you don't have to get up. It's fine. But it's the frustration you want to avoid. You don't want to be in bed trying to sleep, thinking about sleep, tossing and turning. So if you're in that spot, then it's good to just leave the bed and then go to bed either when you actually feel sleepy or when you have those cues I talked about before. Hope this helps, Golem. And any follow-up questions, just post another comment. Yep. And then we have a comment here from, let's see here. He's from Jules. And this is a comment also on episode 57. And it goes like, it's a comment that reads as follows. I feel really tired sometimes over the day, and I haven't got a lot of problems with falling asleep, but the next morning feels like I didn't have any deep sleep. I also have a lot of vivid dreams, and I'm really exhausted. I also wake up really early in the morning and have trouble falling asleep again. Feels like a part of my sleep is missing, like I can never fully recover by sleeping. I measure my blood pressure, and it's high, and sometimes I feel depressed and lost in my thoughts. And Jules actually said, I think one day after this, that the doctor measured my heart rate and blood pressure today, and everything was perfectly healthy. And so that's amazing. I think, what you're describing here, Jules, not necessarily, you know, a lot of it could be insomnia, maybe other things going on too, vivid dreams, that could happen for many reasons, but often when we have like fragmented superficial sleep, then we remember more dreams. That does happen a lot. And so I think I feel like maybe nothing, there was, I think this was just really common. Now I'm reading it, there wasn't really a specific question here, but I want to say that waking up early and having trouble falling back asleep, not feeling rested, these sometimes are, you know, insomnia, like this could definitely be insomnia. And I think the techniques I talk about here, you know, spending less time in bed, shifting attention, not focusing so much on it could maybe be helpful to you. So if you have any questions, though, please post them, and I'll comment on that. And here's another one. This is a really good one, a very common question. This is another comment on episode 57 from Gabriella. Hi, Daniel. What are your thoughts on melatonin? It's been 4 months since my baby boy was born, and like I've told you in previous posts, he sleeps well. I've been doing CBT for about 2 months, once a week sessions. I have nights that I do feel and sleep better, but my biggest issue is the initial falling asleep when I go to bed tired. I can fall asleep on the couch and car, no problem, but once I hit the bed, I get nervous and start thinking about falling asleep. My question, I started taking melatonin again, only 1 milligram, usually works, and I'm asleep after 20 minutes. I'll wake up here and there, but usually fall back asleep in the middle of the night because I'm calm and happy. When I wake up knowing that I did fall asleep and it didn't take me hours, is it the melatonin that's knocking me out, or more so my brain thinking that, oh, now you took melatonin, so you'll fall asleep, mental? Should I stop taking it or continue taking it until my sleep confidence starts to grow now that I'm starting to sleep a bit better? Thanks. Great question. And first of all, you're sleeping a little bit better. That is amazing. That is really the thing to focus on here. You've been doing CBT. That's great. I believe that you would not, I don't know much about you, Gabriella. Of course, there's so much more than what we know about you and your situation from this comment, but I'm still very tempted to say that the reason you're sleeping a bit better is because of the work you've done, the cognitive behavioral therapy you've done. That's amazing. You did this. And that should give you that confidence that I did this, just sticking to the program and working more, I'll get more benefit. You know, that, you know, your sleep confidence, as you said, you did mention, should I continue taking it until my sleep confidence starts to grow more? You know, you're already thinking those terms of sleep confidence. Should I wait until I sleep more? All this is wonderful, wonderful to hear. Now, first thing, I think this is one of the most classic things I hear. I can fall asleep on the couch in car, no problem, but once I hit the bed, I get nervous and start thinking about falling asleep. Well, actually, you mentioned that I get nervous. You identify that in a way. For a lot of people, it's a mystery. It's a mystery that I feel sleepy, at 10:30 p.m. when I'm watching TV. I just can't keep my eyes open. But as soon as I go to bed, ding! Well, and it seems very mysterious. You've identified that it has to do with nervousness and thinking about falling asleep, which, that's really good. You have that foundation. It's not a mystery. You know what's going on. And the reason, by the way, that happens is it's kind of like you say, or the way I put it always is, when we're not trying to fall asleep, when we're watching TV and we actually want to stay awake, sleep comes easy. When we're thinking about sleep, trying to sleep, wanting to sleep, it becomes more difficult. And just to spin off on that, like, because I feel like when I say that, people are going to be like, so what should I be doing? Well, I think the trick there is when you start feeling nervous about sleep, thinking about sleep, then try to shift your attention. You know, you can stay in bed and read or watch something or really do anything that takes your mind off of thinking about sleep, and that can help. Or just try to redirect your thoughts. You know, if you can just think about something different, something pleasant, you know, take a mental journey somewhere, that also is great, of course. Now, the melatonin here. As I've actually talked about earlier in this episode, medications cannot produce sleep. They cannot produce sleep. Therefore, when somebody takes medications can be a little bit sedating, can calm you down and remove some of the anxiety and, you know, kind of the hyperarousal, yes, but they can produce sleep. It's always your own body that produces sleep. Melatonin is not known to be a strong hypnotic. I think for everyone that's taking melatonin, it's really the kind of confidence boost that is what really helps. Now, so if somebody is taking melatonin and you have been sleeping better, then there's no rush to stop it. In fact, I believe that generally the best thing to do when you see a positive trend is keep doing exactly what you're doing. Because you're always seeing a positive trend. So if you keep doing what you're doing until, as you say, my sleep confidence grows, then you're ready to do whatever you want. I don't, to my knowledge, there's no harm in taking 1 milligram melatonin. One could take that indefinitely. It's produced in our own body. If somebody wants to come off melatonin or anything else, I think the first step is to just know that even though I'm taking this, I'm producing the sleep myself. That builds sleep confidence. Perfect. Well done. Well done, Gabriela. Good work. Good work. So we talked about that, and I felt there was maybe one more thing. Oh, yeah. Okay, let's check this one out. So this is a comment from Terry, and this is a comment on cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, the deep dive. It's a fun episode if you haven't watched it. It's me and my two compadres, Michael Schwartz and Martin Reed, just talking insomnia for an hour and a half. Okay, so the comment goes to this. I've been diagnosed with anxiety approximately 5 weeks ago, and sleep prior to that, I slept pretty well. Currently, I'm having trouble staying asleep more than a few hours. I can fall asleep, but wake up in a couple of hours, and I'm sweaty, probably due to anxiety, which is fueled. Well, I cannot sleep. I just lay there and think. Will you suggest getting out of bed and reading or something until I get sleepy? My concern is I may be sitting up the remainder of the night. Another really, really good comment here. Thanks, Terry, and everybody else, by the way. A couple of things here. I feel when I hear somebody say I've had trouble sleeping for a couple of weeks or 2 months or 3 months, I'm actually encouraged by that because it takes time before insomnia becomes like really deeply ingrained. It takes time before you start losing your sleep confidence completely. It takes time before you start believing that you can't sleep. It takes time before you start believing that there's something wrong in your brain and things like that. So there's no reason to believe when somebody's had trouble sleeping for 5 weeks. No, I mean it's much more easy to see that, I'm not a different person. The air that I'm breathing is the same, right? There's no reason to believe I can't sleep as well as I did 5 weeks ago. So that's just a positive overall, like encouraging that it hasn't been that long. And another encouraging thing, I wake up in a couple of hours, I'm sweaty, probably due to anxiety. Whenever somebody thinks something that happens to them is a complete mystery, this must be something really weird, bizarre thing going on. That means that person is a little bit further from being able to really work on their trouble sleeping, as opposed to somebody that identifies this as anxiety. That means you have insight, you have that foundation on which you can build. Really good. Now, I just lay there and think, would you suggest getting out of bed and reading or something until I get sleepy? My concern is I might be sitting up the remainder of the night. Here's the thing, and I'm thinking a lot about how to. I'm thinking about making an episode that's called like Stop Protecting Your Sleep. And so what I think here is that it's all almost like the second arrow thing. It's when let's say somebody's sleeping and they wake up because the cat is meowing, then it's and then they can't fall back asleep again. It's very easy to think of like the cat is the problem. If the cat wouldn't be meowing, I would be sleeping all night. But in reality, if you didn't have somebody that doesn't have any problem sleeping, they wake up a lot too. It's just that they wake up or they're like, oh, get out of my room, cat, go back to sleep. It's not so much what wakes you up that is the problem, it's the reaction to it. It's if somebody has identified or thinks that, the cat waking me up is the reason I can't sleep for 4 hours, then it becomes self-fulfilling. It becomes like, The cat woke me up. Oh no, the cat woke me up. Oh, that's it. I'm not going to sleep at all. That's it. I'm done. And hyperarousal kicks in, and then worry like, what if tomorrow I can't work tomorrow? I'm going to sleep again. Blah blah. That the reaction to it is the real problem. Now, here's where I want to go with this was to say that when we take measures, like taking measures to try to protect our sleep, can really backfire. Because that, you know, they are driven by the fear of losing sleep. And the fear of losing sleep is really what keeps the insomnia going. So in this comment, we can see that Terry is concerned, worried about losing sleep. And that worry, the fear of losing sleep, is really the big problem in my mind. Because then when you wake up and you think, should I go get out of my bed? Well, what if I lose sleep? I can't do that. But should I do this instead? Or should I just lay here? That whole process really fuels insomnia. I can sense that. I haven't really thought about a good analogy yet, but I hope it still translates. So how do you get past this? Well, I think the first thing I want to say here is if somebody is laying in bed and feels kind of like hard to fall back asleep, then it's perfectly fine to just stay there if you're comfortable and you're pleasant. You can go to a place of pleasant thoughts, because then you're probably going to fall back asleep again in not so long. But if that's really hard, if you're just frustrated, anxious, annoyed, angry, then I think generally it's you either stay in bed but do something that keeps you distracted from those thoughts, or if that doesn't work for you, then leave the bed. Yeah. And then you might think, well, what if I stay up? Well, staying in bed, like this original, like the alternative, what's the alternative? The alternative, staying in bed, hasn't been helpful. So you probably have really nothing to lose. And what you might find is that by leaving the bed and getting up, you do shift your thoughts, and you do actually feel sleepy, go back to sleep again, and then you become less worried next time, because then you know that, you know, 2 days ago I got up and I had a sandwich and I read a little bit and then I actually fell back asleep pretty fast. Then you're not worried about that happening again, and you start decreasing the fear of losing sleep. And again, but if you do that, if you say, you know what, I have two thoughts in my mind now. One is, if you do it the second night, if you decide one night and like, you know what, I'm going to try to just get out of bed, and then you are up the whole entire night, that doesn't necessarily mean that it was wrong to do that. It's just like, whenever you change something with insomnia, things typically get worse before they get better. That was number one. Number two, here's a really important one. It just came to my mind, something Nick told me, Nick Wignall, psychologist Nick Wignall. It's what is really troublesome when you wake up in the night is the what ifs. Like, should I do this? Should I do that? What if I do this? What if I do that? So it's really good to have a playbook, meaning already be prepared. So if you wake up and you feel like, I probably won't go back to sleep here, I feel kind of stressed and anxious, then you're going to do that, whatever it is. You can have a book prepared in a reading nook with a light and a nice snuggly blanket. Or you can decide, I'm going to watch this rerun of this MASH or something. Whatever it is, you're prepared. There's no questioning. If I wake up, I'm going to do that. And that takes away so much of that anxiety of what if, what should I do, what should I do, right? You know? So that, I think, is a good one, really good one. Cool. Terry, hope that was helpful, and stay in touch. And then I want to say there's a lot of encouraging comments here from Wei San Tosifi. Thank you so much for the support. Neil, thank you. Layton, thank you very, very much. And Joe, of course, thank you so much. And that actually was it. Very cool. So with that said, I hope you have a really nice rest of your day. If anyone out there has an iPhone, want to work with me, and the curriculum I have made, please download Bedtime with a Y. I know several of you have done that, and I'm super, super grateful for the support and the chance to help you sleep better. If you have an Android phone, it is coming. That said, please keep commenting. That's super helpful. Send me emails at daniel@insomniainsight.co. And I'll be back here with an insight tomorrow. Until then, take it easy.